Hi, I'm Susie Starlight.
And I'm Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to The Supertone Show.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs. Broken idols, broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving, ain't no use joking. Everything is broken. Broken bottles, broken plates, broken switches, broken gates.
Everything is broken. Bob Dylan, the master.
I like that track.
Well, it's not just like, it's fantastic. That's a bit of an understatement. You were dancing, I just saw you then.
I know, it's got really nice groove. I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's good.
Well, and also it's produced by my favourite producer of the whole world, Daniel Lanois.
Never.
Yes.
Indeed.
And it was done in a kitchen in New Orleans, in a bungalow kitchen, believe it or not. And Bob Dylan was sat down while he did it. It was part of the trilogy of records he did. He did this one, he did the Neville Brothers, Yellow Moon, and he did his own magnificent Acadie.
Si.
Si. Well, it's we, actually, because he's French-Canadian, isn't he? So, you know.
We, yeah.
Anyway.
So that was off the Oh Mercy album. I think it was released in 1989.
Fabulous.
And you know, the year before that, that Bob Dylan got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Did he?
Yeah. And Bruce Springsteen. I really like this description. This is what Bruce had to say when he inducted him. His introduction was, "Bob freed your mind the way Elvis freed your body. He showed us that just because music was innately physical didn't mean that it was anti-intellectual."
Blimey. What a way to start the show.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine? Sir Bruce, yeah. Good man anyway. I kind of like that.
Well, my memory of this is that it's the first time I went to America and I had a portable CD player. Very exciting for the time. And
what's a CD? It's a joke. Yeah. Carry on. Sorry.
I remember walking. I got dropped off in the taxi driver at the Golden Gate Bridge, and I walked all the way back to into San Francisco, listening to this album just on repeat. Fantastic. So there you are. That's my story on this.
Well, that's cool. So music was actually the soundtrack to a part of your life.
It always is. The soundtrack to my life.
Indeed.
But now the soundtrack to our life, but very early on. And also recently added to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is...
Wash my soul with water from on high. While the world of love is around me, evil thoughts do bind me. But oh, if you leave me, I will die.
The mighty Sister Rosetta Tharpe and Rock Me. Have a guess when that was recorded.
Well, I don't know.
1938.
No.
Can you believe that?
38, that's incredible.
She was 23 years old and she recorded four songs for Decca. Became an overnight sensation.
So that's before the war, of course, the Second World War. And she's playing electric guitar in a very bluesy... sort of bluesy rock style. She was even using some vibrato. I just mentioned it before when we were listening.
Yeah.
She was like a vibrato, wasn't she?
The first badass female guitarist.
Holy moly.
The godmother of rock and roll, that's what they call her. Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Well, I can't believe it's that old. So there you are. She's only recently, which is a travesty, really, been inducted, isn't she, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I know. I remember seeing a tweet from the Hugh Laurie, and he was saying, you know, she's like the roof. Like, how come it's been taking so long? When he looked into it, there are like 9 years between like 2000 and 2009 when nobody was inducted. And it was like of a special significance from historical. I think the fashion has been to really look at music after the 50s, really, and that's a little bit like I think she was overlooked. But what I didn't realize is that she was gospel, and when she started to try and do blues, it was so frowned upon because it was seen as, you know, like the devil note and the blues and all the sort of bad rep that blues had at that time
and still has.
And basically, she lost favor with all her gospel followers because she tried to cross over to blues And then that didn't go down so well. She tried to go back to gospel, and they didn't want a bar of it, as you would say. So she had a bit of a rough time of it, really.
Well, that's incredible. And, of course, in the early 60s, she did tour with, was it Muddy Waters?
It was Muddy Waters and Otis Spann. Yeah.
Because the pictures, there's a video kicking around with her with an SG guitar, which, of course, wasn't made until the early 60s, in Manchester somewhere, I think, on a railway station. Yeah. Very, very strange. But anyway, yeah, that's the first time I'd ever realised. Oh, but I didn't realise that she started at that time. You can tell by the recording, because the recording, it's very crunchy, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, and she, I think as well, if you remember as well, you've got the sort of religious audiences, and she crossed over, she tried to cross over and wanted to, and did. Mm. And she influenced people like Elvis Presley, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, all these people. And it... I really like her, you know.
Well, yeah, and Ray Charles did a similar thing. He took the devil's music, sorry, the gospel music,
yes,
and then changed it to the devil's
music.
Changed
the lyrics. Yeah, let's get in there.
So it was a sort of thing that was going on. Wow, right.
Well, you're listening to the Supertone Show.
That's right, on Rock Radio
UK.
And on Mixcloud and Spotify next week and stuff. So,
yeah.
Thanks for listening. We are now going to continue our saga, our odyssey into musical excellence.
Now, I really like this guy. I went and saw a tour, and I'll tell you more about it after we play. But this guy on stage is dynamic. And if you ever get a chance to go and see him live, you've got to go and see him live.
Right.
Yeah.
That was by a chap called Brian Wright. Start again. I've got a speech impediment. Brian Wright and the Waco Tragedies.
White.
Yeah, I know.
It's Free, like, Free Wadderick.
Stop it. It's so true. It happens now and again. Yeah, that guy, Brian Wright.
Well, you know, I listened to it. It's a lovely production on that. Great drum sound, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've just looked. That's from his 2007 album, Bluebird. And he produced that album with the band and stuff. I mean, he's just a multi-instrumentalist. He sings, he's piano guitarist on the album.
But you know something quite a lot about him, don't you?
Well, I know a bit. I remember I first bumped into him when I went to see the Hotel Cafe tour, and I saw the guys come through Manchester, and I really, really enjoyed that whole thing with the Hotel Cafe tour of friends playing in each other's bands. And at the time I wasn't in the band, and I felt a bit lonely, actually, I've got to be honest, musically. And so for me, it felt like I could vicariously live through their energy, you know, because I missed that time. And then I went over to see them in Utrecht in the Netherlands. And so I had a mate in Breda. So I got John and I, we whizzed up the motorway and went to see them there. But the one thing, and then I saw them again in London, actually. It was a really, really good.
Bit of a fangirl.
Well, I just loved the vibe. And you know when you've got a thing going, and I remember talking to Kerry Brothers afterwards, just saying, just keep it. He was one of the guys that organised it. I was just like, keep it small, you know, because what I liked was the intimacy of the venues, like the Paradiso, or is like 200 to 400 is just about right, really. But the one thing that struck me about Brian, when he came on stage, he came on and it's almost like he didn't have a bottle of whiskey in his hand, but he felt like he'd come in with this whirlwind of energy, and he felt possessed by the music. It was crazily, beautifully dynamic, and the whole stage erupted. And you can feel that kind of intensity in that in that track, which, so, you know, it's very difficult to capture that, but it winds you up, doesn't it? It makes you want to go, yeah!
Well, yeah, I mean, it's speeding up in the middle as well.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, so I really liked the fact that the music got him and it was infectious, basically.
Yeah, well, it's a good sound, you know, great sound. And you've introduced me to him, really, because I'd never heard him before. But just to give you a bit of an overview, though, we actually listen to all this stuff at home. So what you're listening to, it's like being in our front room, really.
Yeah.
And drinking tea, drinking wine or beer over Sunday lunch or any lunch. And this is the sort of thing you'll hear in the Starlight Campbell household.
Indeed. Oh, no, so one other thing as well. Check out Brian, because he's got a record label now called Cafe Rooster Records with his wife, Sally J, and they've moved to Nashville. Nashville, baby.
Oh, dear.
So they're kicking up some good stuff.
Good. It needs there. It.
Yeah. And they play a lot down on the... They live in the east side, because it says on his website and stuff, and we're connected on Facebook, and it's cool. But I love the way that they say we're playing at the Five Spot. We're playing on that side. So they're bringing in another element of vibrant music and a really good community as well.
Great.
Anyway. Right.
But now, on to one of my great heroes.
Oh,
loves.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Hey! taken my place. Could it be that I'm losing you? When I look into your eyes, a reflection of a face I see.
Rod Stewart, I Know I'm Losing You. Originally hit by The Temptations in 1966 and re-recorded in 1971. What a sound. They were quoted, and this is The Faces, his previous band, and a lot of the band involved in that song, in fact, all of them, I think, were The Faces before. And there was a quote from Pace magazine: "Everything you wanted to believe about rock and roll is true, and here's the proof. Five of the scrawniest, scraggiest moppets in all the kingdom scraped themselves off the pub floor, climbed onto stage, and created magic."
That kind of sums them up.
Well, they were always drunk. They were drunk all the time in The Faces. I mean, my God, there's a live album, and it is absolute chaos. It's just. It's just awful. They're all, you can hear them falling around. And Ronnie Wood, I mean, he was always drunk. Rod Stewart was always drunk. I mean, you know, it was incredible. But they're still going.
I tell you, there's one thing. Because I listened to Rod Stewart later on in life, now I'm rediscovering, or discovering for the first time, his earlier work. I can now understand why he's so cool. Because that early music that he had, there's something, he's got something. And I know they had to change direction and maybe some standards that made him a little bit more middle of the road. But that guy is, he can't sit still, can he? He's a dancer. He's an entertainer. He's got a great sense of humour.
Yeah, well, we saw him recently on Unplugged.
You know?
And he couldn't sit down. I mean, it's got quite a long time, one of the MTV sessions. But he just couldn't sit down.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. But, I mean, he was ultra cool. Jeff Beck chose him to be the singer in the Jeff Beck group, the original Jeff Beck group. Mm. I mean, if that had taken off, you know, because he was trying to compete with Led Zeppelin, of course, you know, with his mate and rival, Jimmy Page. So, I mean, he had a great voice. Well, he still has a great voice, you know.
Yeah, it's almost like you wonder where it's come from. It's really distinctive, isn't it?
Yeah, and his hair. Of course, it's like
and
a
he's
brush
tiny
on his head.
As well. It's true.
It's true. Yeah, but what a particular? I mean, you know me and sound and stuff. Mm. I love you know, production, and that production is fantastic. It is because they produced it, or he produced it with the band. But the album before, of course, was produced by Glyn Johns. So they obviously nicked all the techniques. You could hear all the, you know, the mic techniques there and everything, and you know, they obviously always did it. All did it together, and that album. I mean, there's a couple of tracks where there's a quite a significant delay of everybody coming in on time because I said they're drunk.
You can hear,
but it takes them like two or three bars and then they get into it and the whole swing and they groove like hell, you know?
And they left it because there's the magic, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about that groove, do you know what it's time for now?
Feel it's their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me, all you want to do is use me. But my answer, till you use me up. Until you use me up. My brother sit me right down and he talked to me. He told me that I ought not to let you just walk on me. And I'm sure he meant well. Yeah, but when I talk was through, I said, brother, if you only knew, you'd wish that you were in my shoes. You just keep on using me. Until you use me up. Until you use me up. Sometimes that's true, you really do abuse me. You get me in a crowd of high class people. And then you act real rude to me. But oh baby, 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 when you love me I can't get enough. And I wanna spread the news that if it feels it's good getting used, oh you just keep on using me. Until you use me up. Until you use me up. Talking about you, you let me
the inimitable Bill Withers and Use Me. And guess who's on drums?
James Gadson.
I got me some Gadson. I need a Gadson fix. That, I'm smiling. I love that guy.
His groove, it's so lazy, it's so beautiful. It is the Bill Withers sound. I think, you know, I mean, obviously the songs are amazing and he's got an incredible voice, but, you know, that groove was going on. It's amazing.
1972. It was that album that actually started to get James a bit of profile, really, because he started recording with the Temptations the year after. And you know what? There's a part of me that doesn't want to say anything about any detail. I want to bask in the happiness of the groove. Mm. And please, look, if you haven't seen James play, get on YouTube, because he will make you smile. He's just, the way he plays, his smile, he just makes you happy. He really makes you feel, and he's totally in the music as well, and it just makes me giggle. Every time we see him, we just erupt with laughter, don't we, and happiness. Last week
we played Doyle Bramhall.
Yeah,
Mama
Can't Help You,
right. And there's the video for that, it's fantastic, because it's featuring him, and he does this, like, he doesn't smile, he sort of just grimaces. Looks like he's got a nasty case of wind, but you know, it's absolutely amazing.
It's not true. It's not. It kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really mean.
But no, it is.
He's amazing, though, isn't he? Because he just catches your attention, and you just end up in this kind of bubble of wonderment, don't you, really?
Yeah.
So we're going to do a Gadson thing. I think one of my missions in life is actually to get this guy more recognised, and I want everyone to get their Gadson fix, you know. Get me some Gadson.
Well, there's a lot of people liking Gadson out there, and we love him for sure. And, of course, not to take anything away from Bill Withers, because without Bill Withers, you know, and his songs, James Gadson couldn't do what he does.
Oh, but Bill Withers is like, God, he's just like a whole world in himself, isn't he?
Yeah, amazing.
Beautiful, creamy vocals.
I'm sure you're going to hear some more of those tracks over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
So, what are we on next? Well, that is the question.
Do we never get an answer when we're knocking at the door? With a thousand million questions about hate and death and war. 'Cause when we stop and look around us, there is nothing that we need. In a world of persecution that is burning in. You mean it when you tell me what will be. And when you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant for you. I'm looking for someone to change. I'm
silence of the mountains and the crashing of the sea. There lies a land I once lived in, and she's waiting there for me. But in the gray of the morning, my mind becomes confused between the dead and the sleeping and the road that I must choose. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, to lose the love I knew, could safely lead me to the land that I once knew. Learn as we grow the secrets of our soul. Not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way you really mean it when you tell me what will be.
Blues in question.
Fabulous. That was about the Vietnam War, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Written by Justin Hayward.
1970.
Yeah. I love, you know, the thing I... it's so sonically different, but I like the beginning. Da-da! Oh, oh.
Well, you know, I mean, they were using massively Mellotron. I mean, they've always used Mellotron, but on that, it really is so bombastic. That's the only word. And I mean, a lot of people had an issue with the Moody Blues, saying that we're too much and too theatrical and stuff. But I love that. So that middle section is beautiful. You know, it really is a beautiful melody, and it's just, you know, it's just a fantastic piece, the whole thing.
So what, I mean, we both love the Moody's, but what do you think, for you as a musician, what do they, how do they inspire you?
Well, I love the songwriting. I think that Justin Hayward's guitar playing is very, very underrated. If you listen to Isn't Life Strange, for example, and I think we're probably going to be playing that over the next few weeks, the guitars in there, the fuzz guitars, you listen to those, look at the time it was done, and then play Brian May, and it is the same thing. Brian May has stolen, basically. It's true. He has stolen that whole harmony guitar thing from, you know, from Justin Hayward. And it's beautiful, you know. But at the time, of course, he was a good-looking lad. He wrote great songs. He had a fantastic voice. He was a great guitar player. And at the time, you know, they were a massive, massive, massive band.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had it all going for him, the lad. And that's and the rest of the band as well. I mean, including Tony Clark, who was the producer, who they said was the extra member, rather like Sir George Martin was with the Beatles. He was there, and together they made beautiful things, you know. At the Decca, Broadus Gardens Recording Studio, I think most of them were done. They had their own room.
So if you don't really know the Moody Blues, what album would you suggest somebody start with to try and, you know, as a good introduction to them? What do you think? Their early stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Threshold of a Dream, I think, is really good. That's a great one to start with. But they were the ones who came up with really the concept album, really, and the Gatefold Sleeve.
Yeah,
they were the first ones. Yeah, they started it, the Gatefold Sleeve thing.
So they must be then indirectly connected to the reason why there was the old Grey Whistle Test, because that was a whole programme that was developed because of the concept of the album, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was all linked intrinsically. So anyway, that's the Moody Blues. We're going to change it up a bit now, baby. We're going to somewhere that I know very well.
Ah,
indeed. Feel it. I feel love. Donna Summer.
Yes, folks, it's disco, but not as you know it.
D-I-S-C-O.
Fabulous.
1977. Donna Summer from her album Remember Yesterday.
Well, Brian Eno said, this is it. Look no further. This single is going to change the sound of club music for the next 15 years. And it did, but not for 15, more like 30, really?
Yeah.
It started it all off. And Giorgio Moroder, what a genius, you know, absolute genius, electronic music. You know, if you saw the tools that he was working with at the time, it was very rudimentary, you know, and he created that incredible song. And, you know, of course, you know, the writers are amazing, great vocal. And the production, again, was totally mighty, totally mighty.
What was quite interesting is that they'd swapped the orchestral background for normal disco music. So they had the synthesized
thing
going down. And that was like a new... And his assistant was Pete... I don't know how you pronounce his name. Belotti?
Yeah.
And he was like his assistant for a year and a half and stuff. And there's a great, there's a, just a quick aside. When he first got the job with Giorgio to work as his assistant, he just said, right, he gave Pete his briefcase and said, yeah, carry that and da-da-da. And he went, look, I'll do whatever you want, but I'm not carrying your briefcase. And they said they never drank, they never did drugs, they never fell out. They just worked together for a few years and they just always were there for the music. But so I just thought that was kind of a nice, cool story.
Is. And the other thing, if you listen to Blue Monday as well by New Order, and you know, it's directly inspired by that, you know. Mm. You know, he was the beginning of that electronic thing going on.
But also, you know, if we're talking about the blues and the different genres, it, like the instrumentation, when that changes, you get the different scene, the different feel, don't you? But you can kind of imagine that if we had like the old style instruments and stuff.
Yeah.
You could translate that.
Well, I suppose it's like when, you know, you know, when you went from a basic acoustic blues sort of feel,
yeah,
you know, into the more electric stuff and the Chicago blues later on, you know, that was a big change when Bob Dylan changed from acoustic to electric.
I remember that. Yeah. Remember that documentary when the guy's just like really swearing at him, shouting? He was booed, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Terrible. He stopped touring for ages because of that, I think.
And backed by the band. The Mighty Band, yeah. Which I'm sure you're going to be hearing some over the next few weeks. Band, we love those guys.
Yeah, they're ace.
Robbie Robertson. Oh, see. Yeah.
What they called, was it the Hawks?
I don't know. Because they changed the name of the band. Was it not because when he started working, well, when they started working with Bob Dylan, they needed a name.
Yeah.
And they just decided to call themselves the band because they were the band.
Oh, it could have been another band that I'm thinking of. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, it's one of those. We'll find out. I'll let you know.
Yeah, no problem. We'll come back.
Look, it's just questions, really. Interesting, but I do like that song, just to close on the I Feel Love. I mean, immediately there's energy there, isn't there? There's sort of, it just makes you sit up and you go, hey, up.
Yeah, it's sexy. It's sexy. It's got a sexy thing going on, you know?
And also, Donna Summer just come off, she'd been in the musical Hair.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that why she had big hair? I don't know. She looked like she had a big afro, if I remember correctly.
So she came from
video.
Gospel as well. So it's really interesting. She went from gospel to disco. Get in there.
Well, she did it with incredible aplomb. But of course now...
Oh, I love this song.
Well, yeah. One of the greatest blues artists of all time. And, you know, you could argue that, of course, it started, you know, with the black and in the fields of cotton, in the oppression, the hideous oppression, you know, in the 20s and 30s and stuff. But this guy took it... As a white man into something completely different, but he still had that feeling, that brokenness. So one of our favourite tracks of all time, really.
Shall I tell you about my life? They say I'm a man of the world. I've flown across every tide. I've seen lots of pretty girls. I guess I've got everything I need. I wouldn't ask for more. There's no one I'd rather be. But I just wish I had never been born. Thank you.
could tell you about my life. Keep you amused, I'm sure, about all the times I'm blind. Now I don't want to be sad anymore.
Man of the World, Fleetwood Mac. Well, what a track. Peter Green, what a guitar player, what a vocalist, what a singer. You know, he had it all. And unfortunately, through chemicals, it destroyed his career and his life for a long time. You know, very, very sad. But in his time that he was around and doing it, he created some incredible music. I think he's my favourite white blues guitar player by a country mile, really.
He is. There's something quite magical with Peter Green, isn't there? You just, I can't, I've become very quiet actually because I can't speak when I hear that song, especially. It's one of my favourites. In fact, one of my best friends of all time, John Wood from Mosley, who built my aerial Colt motorbike.
Yeah.
I first heard this song, he was playing an acoustic guitar, his rendition of it, and I was like, what is that song? And then when I heard Peter Green sing it, I'm like, oh, beautiful.
But I it's not very often I listen to it on cans, because I've got cans on right now, and there are, you know, little inconsistencies, little glitches to that performance, but it sounds to me like they've played it and he hasn't messed with it, he's just done it. And, you know, there's little clicks of the guitar string, a little bit, and, you know, it, now you try and edit them out, you go, oh, do another take or whatever, you know? But why? It's just got that feel. It's such a beautiful thing.
But I think the imperfection makes it real. That's the thing. I think that's why you relate to it, because it's not perfect. It's just simply quite magnificent.
Yeah. Oh, it was, you know. And and of course, our friend Mike Vernon produced it along with...
Of course.
That's right. Virtually all the Fleetwood Mac stuff he produced, you know, which is absolutely
incredible.
Sensational, you know. And we did, we've got some other podcasts out there with the producer series. If you look back on our Mixcloud feed, you'll see we've done a producer series, and that's a great one, actually. We enjoyed doing that, didn't we?
Yeah, with Mike. Because it was just so much. When we connected up on Facebook and go, we didn't really know too much about him. We did a bit, but
then
you kind of
realized.
Then you open up the treasure chest, you go, no way, really? And it just went on for ages. It was almost exhaustingly wonderful.
Yeah, it was.
What a magical, amazing experience this guy has had, really, and so much influence. He's highly commended, actually. So this is the Supertone Show.
It sure is.
It is on Rock Radio UK.
With Susie Starlight.
And Simon Campbell.
Yeah, the very man. And the very lady, in fact.
See.
So, we're coming up to our final track now.
Yes.
We're on every week on Rock Radio UK.
Thursday at 4 o'clock.
And
starting in March, on Friday mornings at 9 o'clock.
Fantastic. That's great.
Great.
And the week after it's broadcast on Rock Radio, it's available on Mixcloud, as we said, iTunes, Spotify, we're everywhere.
And if you want to get hold of us, send us an email, podcast@supertonerecords.com.
That's right. Or you can find us on Facebook or our website, Starlight Campbell. Stick it in there and you will find us hanging around.
Okay.
And the final track is a more modern band, The Black Keys. But this is some of their early stuff, because I've got to say, like most bands, I prefer their early thing. This is when they were just doing drums and extremely fiercely distorted guitars.
Okay.
Dan Auerbach, we love him. He understands the blues. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.